Good evening and welcome to Encore with Zoe Ryan, as always, bringing you the latest of what's happening in arts, culture and entertainment across the Midlands. On tonight's show, a styling masterclass in Laois, a community art exhibition in Westmeath and an over 18s pantomime in Offaly. Very shortly, style architect Valerie Mae will be here to reveal some of the tricks of the trade when it comes to styling our clothing. After that, we'll be hearing from Loon Gallery's Aoife Banks on opening their Threads of Place collection to the public. And later on, we'll be talking to Mark Duffy, the creator behind the X-rated panto set to unfold at Esker Arts this weekend. But first, some music from an emerging band that will be taking to the Forest Fest stage in Emo this weekend. Astrophonics are an Irish folk rock fusion act fronted by Aaron Thompson and Sophia Jones, and definitely are one to watch. This is Colours Keep Changing from Astrophonics. That was Astrophonics with their single Colours Keep Changing, and they, along with a host of other artists, will be performing at Forest Fest in Emo this weekend, running from tomorrow, July 24th, right through to Sunday, July 26th. And for a full lineup across the multiple stages available at Forest Fest, do check out their website and social media platforms. Stay with us for a styling expert to impart some wisdom on us. It is Zoe Ryan bringing you Encore, your weekly arts and entertainment show on Midlands 103, where I like to push the boundaries of what is considered art, which brings me on to my next topic of discussion this evening, the art of styling. To assist me with that is French-born style architect and founder of What to Wear, Valerie Mae. Valerie, thank you for calling out to the studio this evening.
Thank you for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
Now, Valerie, a situation I regularly am faced with is looking into my wardrobe full of clothes, and after spending some time unsuccessfully attempting to compose a decent outfit, come to the conclusion I have nothing to wear. Now, this is a scenario that I've come to understand is very common. But why is that? Why is it that with all this clothes, we have nothing to wear?
Okay, so I think I solved the problem.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
Because I was in the same situation. I had the same issue. I love clothes and I kept buying clothes and I had a closet full of clothes. And yeah, it would take me a lot of time to put an outfit together.
Exactly, yes.
Until I ended up in a situation where life wouldn't give me time in the morning. I literally had 5 minutes, you know, before to go to work in the morning. So that's very little. And I did put outfits out of the wardrobe, ended up going to work and still getting compliments about my outfits. And I started asking myself question, why does that happen? Because literally I didn't have time to think of what I was putting on.
Yeah.
So the solution I came up with is that every time you buy a new item, you have to think, will this match the rest of my wardrobe? So the clue is to, instead of buying outfits when you go shopping, you buy items.
That go with ones you already have.
Matching items.
Yeah.
So that is the main thing. That's what you start with. So if you want to do that, of course, you need to know what suits you.
Yes.
So you need to know what color suits you. So you need to do a little bit of work on that. You need to find what shape suits you. And you also need to know your measurements. And about measurements, there's something that's interesting as well, is that, you know, in the shops, you have a size 12, size 16, size 8. And you think, okay, let's say I'm a size 12, so I'm going to buy size 12 items. But most of us are not just a size 12. We can be a size 10 on top, a size 14 on the waist, and a size 12 on the hips.
So it's all about trying them on, I suppose.
You try them on, absolutely. Like, if you want to shop online, if you prefer to shop online, you have to know your sizes. Because let's say, for example, you want to buy a dress and you're size 14 on your hips and a size 10 on top. So you're not going to buy the size 10 or the size 12 because it's in between. You're going to buy the size 14 because you want the dress to suit your largest body part.
Okay, interesting.
Yes. Now, if you're a 16 somewhere and a 10 somewhere else, you may have, for example, buy a dress that is very wide at the bottom. So these are the reasons you need to know your body shape.
Yes, and I suppose you get into the business then of you have to get things tailored then if you're going to be shopping in that way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, you would.
But you mentioned there about knowing your body type. Yeah, so that's obviously very important. How does one go about kind of figuring that out? Because sometimes I think I'm a particular shape and then I maybe buy an item that I'm going, oh, that's meant to fit that shape. But I know when I put it on me, it won't suit me. So how does someone go about kind of figuring out what shape or builds they actually have?
Well, there is different shapes that are, you know, they have names like the hourglass shape.
Yeah,
I'm not very familiar with the names.
And kind apple, of if you broad shoulders,
apple,
but small waist.
Yeah, apple shape, hourglass, rectangle, pear, and inverted triangle.
Yes, so, that's the one.
But so you can learn about that. You know, you would find information even online about that. So if you really want a name, you know, for your shape, to know what category you're in. But really trying on clothes.
Yeah, that's
really
how you know what
trying
suits.
On clothes. Yeah, yeah, because you will, or unless you go see a stylist.
Yes, of course.
because well, I can give a lot of advice for all the different styles and shapes of women. We're all completely different, and none of us should wear the same clothes the same way, you know. But I'd say trying on clothes, yes. And if you're not comfortable trying on clothes, it's okay to get help from someone. It doesn't have to be a stylist. You can go with your best friend or your sister.
Yeah.
You know,
someone who you know will tell you the truth.
Someone who sees you from outside, because you know, you see yourself in front of a mirror. Well, you can have a mirror at the back and see the back of yourself, but you're not really moving. You know, it's the vision is not the same as somebody who sees you from the outside. So someone who's familiar with you and used to see you all the time, and somebody, if that person dresses well, even better.
You
know,
the advice
would be good. Yes.
You mentioned there about knowing your colouring. That is something I wanted to ask you about your opinion on colour analysis, because I would often find that sometimes you'd put something on and depending on the colour, you go, God, that's really bringing out my features. Mm-hmm. And then other times you put on colours and you go, I feel very drawn and very grey. I think that's kind of, you know, not doing me any favours here. But I don't quite know what colour palette to go for. So what would your opinion be on seeking out, going for a colour analysis? Do you think that is a must? Or are you thinking, no, I think you probably, you know, would know your own colour. But I know there's loads of, it's got to do your skin colour, it's got to do your hair colour. So how do you get sound advice on that?
So it's, okay, same again, you can see a stylist, but you can also, there's a trick to do it yourself.
Okay.
If you go in a shop and, or go for the colours you like first, because you want to be happy with what you wear. So pick some items, tops, okay? You go to the shop, you pick some tops, 3, 4, 5 different colors, and you go to the fitting room.
Yes.
And you just put the tops underneath your chin. Mm. You don't have to put them on. Just put them underneath your chin and look in the mirror.
Mm.
But when you're looking in the mirror, you're not looking at the clothes, you look at your face.
Yes.
And then you swap with another color and you keep looking at your face, not at the clothes. And if you observe very well, it's not everybody is able to do it, but that's how to do it. You observe your face and you will see that under some colors, you don't look as well.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
So then you put them aside. You don't go near these colors.
We're not wearing those colors anymore, yes.
Another thing is that you cannot say to someone, well, like me, I say I don't particularly love pink, but pink suits me.
Okay.
Okay, it suits me. It brights up my face. It makes me look younger. But you cannot say to someone, for example, pink doesn't suit you, because there's plenty of different pink colors.
I was just about to say, like people always say to me, because I have fair skin and I have red hair, and they're always like, oh, green, definitely green. But I'm going, yeah, I think certain shades of green, but not others.
No, not all of them. I wouldn't see you with flashy colors, for example, because you probably would disappear a little bit. The colors would be too strong for you.
Mm.
So I'm not sure pink would suit you, but as I say, there's some type
of pink.
There's some shade of pink that would suit you, definitely. So this is why sometimes, you know, if you do color analysis, you cannot just say, okay, your colors are brown and blue and green. No, you have to have the right shade.
Mm.
So this is where it gets a little bit tricky. But you can try that yourself. You can even try at home. You open your closet.
Of what you already own.
Take what you already own. Yeah. The strongest color you have. The strongest colors you have, and go in front of the mirror, look at your face and see, or you can ask someone as well, but it's better if you do it yourself, because the colors can make you feel good as well, not just look good. You can look good with it, but you need to feel good as well. So this is the trick for the colors.
Because that is a massive part of it, isn't it? It's feeling confident in whatever you're wearing. Like, no matter what it is that the event is that you're going to, whether it's a work event or it's just meeting friends for coffee, you want to feel confident. Mm-hmm. And that means that you want to know that you look good in what you're wearing, that it's the right cut for you, that it's the right color mm-hmm. scheme, and that you just feel well, because it can be such a degrading experience when, like that, you're going through your wardrobe and nothing you put on is just fitting right, or like that, going into the changing rooms in the shop. It can be a very horrible experience. Like, I know I've stopped changing in the dressing rooms. Mm. I just buy the clothes and I bring them home and try them on and in the comfort of my own home. Exactly. But for somebody who, you mentioned it earlier, who maybe they don't have a lot of time, and maybe they do have to spend a lot of time going through the wardrobe, curating outfits, would you say that it's a good idea to maybe pre-prepare your outfits for the week, to say, okay, if you have the week ahead of you, you have some work events, you've got, you know, some family events, whatever, say to yourself, right, what outfits am I going to wear what days, and line them up? That was advice I was given before, is to get a rail and just put your outfits out for the week, and that means that when you go on that day, you just grab it. Mm. Or do you think that's overkill?
It can work for some people, but I personally wouldn't advise it, because your mood changes every day.
Yeah, that's true.
So you may have outfits ready for the week, and that particular day you can wake up and you might not feel good in the outfit that you have prepared.
Yeah, so true.
And it's very important to feel good in what you're wearing, not just looking good, you know, because when you feel good, it helps looking good.
Yeah,
you're
definitely
happy in yourself.
You carry yourself more confidently.
Yes, and we are not here to showcase clothes. We are here to showcase ourselves. So our clothes are, we pick the clothes that make us look better and feel better. So that's very important. So I have actually, the course that I'm delivering is called Adjusting Your Look to Your Personality.
Mm.
So this is what it's all about. It's for the woman to feel good in themselves.
Yes,
that's major. And the trick would be, what I would advise, instead of, some people can do it, if it works for them, it's fine. They can have their outfits ready for the week. It definitely helps time. But what I would advise is to check your wardrobe and take out three essentials. So let's say a pair of trousers that you like, that suits you, and that has maybe a neutral color.
Mm.
So you start with that. I'm just giving you an example. And then you find another neutral, which is, for me, for example, it's a white linen shirt.
Yeah.
Okay? So it looks professional. It brights up the look. And you can wear it with anything in any circumstances. So these are called neutrals items. And you can have two or three neutral items, and you establish which ones they are. And then you look into your closet, which items go with them. Mm-hmm. What can you match them with? So you can add up colors to them. So it's an example of how you start to build a wardrobe that will be adapted to you.
Yeah, so they're your bases, and then you're building upon them.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the other trick is to find out your colors, and maybe to start with three colors max. So you can have two neutral colors. So the neutral colors would be black, white, gray, beige, you know. So you can have two different neutral colors.
Yeah.
And then you find out three of your colors.
Mm.
And you cannot go wrong. If you buy the items with these five different colors, you can mix and match everything.
Yeah, it's like capsule wardrobe kind of thinking, isn't it? That kind of everything would go with each
other. It's the same principle, except this way it's adapted to you.
Yeah.
And you can add up items along the way and for the different seasons. And the trick is that if you want to stay trendy, because we love following fashion, and sometimes our colors are not in fashion this year or something like this. Well, what I do is I add it with the accessories.
Okay, right. So that's bringing in your kind of seasonal look to
it. So I give you all my secrets now.
So that's your top tips and tricks. You mentioned there about a workshop that you're going to be offering in the near future. So you've got the workshop coming up. What other services do you offer then that people can avail of?
Oh, I do personal styling. So I would meet a women, and I would ask them what are their needs, why they need my help. So I would find out what type of outfits would suit them, and I would go work on it, and I'll come back with like a little package with their colors, designs of different outfits that would work there. Yeah. For their body shape, and maybe images of outfits they can buy, items they can buy in the shop. So that would be the personalized styling. I do wardrobe edit, so I can go through your wardrobe and organize it or add up different items, etc. And I also do personal shopping.
Amazing.
So I can go with you shopping and help you find the right items.
Yes.
So that's most of it. I also give a little consultation online if somebody needs advice. And I have two other aspects in my business. I have course books and guides that you can get online.
Yes.
So you can learn a lot from this. And I also have a slow fashion sustainable collection. Few items, mostly made out of linen, a little bit of silk, and a little bit of wool. So it's all sustainable, and it's all fabrics and products that are good for your skin.
Yes.
Yeah, that are healthy for you. So this is about what I offer. Yeah, and you can find everything on my website if you visit it.
Fantastic. As Valerie said there, she does have a workshop coming up. So if you are interested in availing of that expertise, do go and check out her website, whattowear.ie, and keep an eye on her social platforms at whattowear for updates on upcoming workshops. Valerie, thank you so much again.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
And on the topic of workshops, on the back of the success of their audition workshop earlier this year, Mullingar Arts Centre are hosting a voice workshop this Sunday with actor Daniel Edgerton from 2:30 to 5:30. It's actually the first of three summer workshops they will be offering. And for more details on that, go to mullingararts.ie. After this, we'll be discussing a more traditional art form. You are listening to Encore in Midlands 103 with myself, Zoe Ryan, with you until 8pm. Now, something we are seeing more and more of is professional exhibition spaces playing host to showcasing art created by members of the local community in an effort to open up art to a wider group, to invite people into the spaces that ordinarily they may not venture into. And one such example of this is the Threads of Place exhibition, a collection of community-made or generated artwork that is being unveiled next weekend at both the Lewin Gallery and Abbey Road Studios in Athlone. Joining me now to discuss the initiative is Lewin Gallery's curator, Aoife Banks. Aoife, thanks very much for agreeing to speak with me this evening.
Thank you so much for having me speak with you.
Aoife, tell me a bit about Threads of Place, the community project that generated the works of art that are featured.
Absolutely. So Threads of Place is a community exhibition that will showcase artwork made by people who engaged with the Threads of Place project. So Threads of Place is a community-focused visual arts project that brings together visual arts practice and Athlone's cultural and social heritage through a series of different drawing-based activities and events across multiple sites. So it started as a collaboration between Lewin Gallery, Athlone Castle and Abbey Road Artist Studios. And it is a project that's funded by the Creative Ireland Community Grant through Westmeath Arts. So this collaboration was really something that had us put our minds together and think, how do we engage local communities with the rich amount of heritage, history and culture and arts that we have on offer here in Athlone? And we came up with Threads of Place as a way to really engage different aspects of what we have on offer in terms of those things with heritage and arts in Athlone. It began with a series of events, drawing workshops, tours of the exhibitions that were on show in Lewin Gallery. We engaged local artists Martina Coyle and Teresa Doyle, Rob Quinn, Hilary Kinahan and Andrea Cullen to develop and facilitate quite a diverse array of workshops and tours. So, for example, we had the collaboration with St. Hilda Services. So service users from St. Hilda's were brought on a tour of the exhibition in Lewin Gallery, guided through different drawing techniques, kind of loosening up their creativity and flow as they went through the exhibition. And then there was a hands-on workshop delivered by Martina Coyle, and that was responding directly to still life scenes that were pulled from the Athlone Castle's handling collection. So these artifacts, replicas from the time of the Athlone siege, everyday objects, domestic objects, weapons, pistols that had been used. These were the still life studies that inspired the workshop. So it was really quite emerging of being inspired by what's possible in terms of drawing practice and then putting that into application and using things from local heritage to prompt the output. And some of those works will be on display in this exhibition, as well as all of the other works from the other events and workshops that we've held, including a plein air workshop that lasted all day outside the Abbey Road Workhouse, right beside the Franciscan Abbey, and indeed a life drawing session with Rob Quinn, where participants were invited to draw the military uniforms of the 17th century siege of Athlone. So we collaborated with Athlone Little Theatre. We had the military personnel of the time dressed in these costumes and uniforms, and they were the life models. So participants were guided in life drawing techniques using these subjects by Rob Quinn. And we also had a talk about the costuming, things that were used in terms of like weaponry of the time, by Dr. Harman Murtha. So again, quite a nice merge of artistic practice and also historical exploration and a look into the heritage that we have here in this town.
And the works have been described as community responses. Would you agree with that?
I would, because we've had so many different types of workshops and events that have catered to a lot of different people. We've had children's workshops. We've had events that would be more interesting, I suppose, to people who would practice regularly as artists. So reached out to community groups like St. Hilda's Service Users and the Scouts. So having people from the community responding directly to these sites of heritage and to the local services like Lewin Gallery and like Abbey Road Artist Studios, I would say yes, that it is quite a nice pull together of all of these community engagements.
And Aoife, what was it, or what is it, that the desired outcome or ambition of this is?
It's really a way for people to reconnect with what's on offer here in Athlone in terms of our arts and heritage. It's also a way for people to come together in ways that are kind of hard to come by in this day and age. We're all quite busy. We all have quite a few on our plate. And oftentimes having that kind of third space, you know, activity to attend, event to participate in, it can be difficult to really pin down the time to do that. It can also be difficult to find something of interest to do. So having these things on offer and having a place for people to come together with shared interests and build connect is quite beneficial. And we've seen a lovely, lovely community come from it. And we're hoping with the culmination of this project, with the exhibition that is being held across Lewin Gallery's Boardwalk Gallery space and the community space in Abbey Road Artist Studios, we're hoping that this weekend-long event will again bring people back together for a moment of reflection and celebrating and, you know, a moment to be proud of what they've created.
And as you've mentioned there, you've decided to split the exhibition across two different locations. Why two locations?
It's practical in the sense that it allows for more gallery space to be used.
Yes,
but also, I think that's a very small point in the grand scheme of it. Really, the purpose of it is for people to engage with spaces that they may not usually engage with. I mean, we can all drive past the same building, like, you know, every day for many years and, you know, never really get the chance to look in or investigate or explore. And it can be nice able to do that and to have that opportunity to engage with a gallery or indeed with the Abbey Road Artist Studios, which is situated in the old workhouse. So that has so much history embedded within its walls, and is quite pertinent to have the work displayed in that space as well.
And as a curator, how is it that you went about dividing up the artwork between the two spaces? Was it, you know, down to logistics of going, okay, well, this is a larger piece that would fit better on the wall in one gallery over the other? Or did you divide out the pieces going, okay, well, there's a logical kind of a theme or kind of, you know, a togetherness to this grouping of items, so we'll put them in one and then we'll put these grouping in another? What was your way of thinking of dividing them out?
Well, that was actually quite considered by the team here. The gallery team and the Athlone Castle team would have input into this because it was a collaborative project that all the team members worked on together, and so naturally the output of the exhibition would as well be a collaborative endeavor. So the consideration for how to display and how to maybe divide the works from one space to the next, be a consideration of if a work is responding to, let's say, for example, there's works that were created during the plein air event and they were drawn or painted in the Abbey Road graveyard beside the Franciscan Abbey ruins. So those works, they may be more befitting to be shown in the Abbey Road studio space. And also space and logistics is certainly a consideration too. We do have a lovely large collaborative work by the service users of St. Hilda's. So finding the right space to really do that work justice is important, as well as the conceptual relevance of a work to a particular space or location.
Yes. And out of all the pieces, are there any that you would say stand out in your mind that you would say, if you're calling down, definitely make sure that you have a look at this piece?
They're all quite different, which is always interesting when you have a workshop that looks at a very particular thing. It's really fantastic when you see every participant having a very different response.
Yeah.
That's the beauty. I wouldn't say there's any one work in particular. I think that all of the works really stand on their own. And I think that the overall achievement of the exhibition is that they stand together. And having that sense of togetherness and having a work by maybe a 7-year-old scout member beside a 59-year-old visual artist is kind of the beauty of it. Because how often can we have an exhibition like that? And it really shows that, you know, everyone is a part of this project and is on the same kind of same wavelength, maybe I could say.
And it is worth noting that this is an open and free access event. So it really is going down to what you'd hope to set out with this. It's that it's opening up art to a wider audience, inviting people in.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That's quite important. And as well, the exhibition is taking place on the Saturday and the Sunday of the August bank holiday weekend. So we did that with the intention of there being quite a few people in the town for the River Festival, of course. So in order to get the largest number of people to engage with the exhibition, it's a free event and it's also happening during a weekend that will be quite busy and we'll have lots of opportunity for people to engage with it.
Great. Aoife, thanks a million for your time on this.
Great. Thank you so much, Zoe.
Aoife Banks, their curator at Lewin Gallery in Athlone, talking about the upcoming community-created exhibition Threads of Place, which will be available to view at the Lewin Gallery and Abbey Road Studios next weekend across Saturday, August 1st and Sunday, August 2nd. Full details can be found on lewingallery.ie under upcoming events. Now, an exhibition of a similar nature is actually being launched this weekend in Banagher Library. Feathered Between the Cracks is a body of work inspired by inspired by the swifts, which are a species of birds closely linked to Banagher and the River Shannon. That's happening on Saturday, July 25th at 11 a.m. in Banagher Library, and all are welcome to attend. Still to come on tonight's programme, a panto with a twist. It's Encore and Midlands 103 with Zoe Ryan. Now, on last week's show, I teased the final segment of tonight's show, an adults-only panto. Yes, you heard me right. Cinderella, spelt with an S for sin, is coming to Esquer Arts Centre in Tullamore this weekend. And to tell us all about the saucy affair is writer and producer of the production, Mark Duffy of Mark Duffy Pantomimes. Mark, how are things? How is everything set for Saturday night?
Zoe, how are you? Hope you're well. Yeah, we are, as you said there in the intro, we are in the Esquer Arts in Tullamore on Saturday. So we are ready to go from Ireland, really, really looking forward to the show and bringing it to an Offaly audience for the first time ever. So yeah, look, really, really looking forward to it. We can't wait to hit the stage on in 2 nights' time, actually, which has come around so quickly.
And Mark, tell me, at what point was it that you said to yourself, you know what, pantomimes are great, but they could be elevated?
Well, I suppose it's an interesting, like, my own background would be, I suppose, in writing family pantos and being on stage in your family, traditional family pantos.
Right? Yeah.
So it kind of derived from there, I suppose, going back to the end of, I suppose, 2024, like, I suppose adult only pantos are quite popular, actually, thing in the UK, believe it or not. And so that's where I would have come across it initially. And going back to the end of 2024, my own son Harry, he takes part in the Olympia Panto in Dublin. The family panto is Al Porter, Ian McGregor, these type of people every year.
Yeah.
So Harry has been in that. So I've been attending that show. And the year before last year, they staged a one-off adult-only panto in the middle of their family panto run. So I'd been humming hard for a couple of months before that about maybe trying this. And I went up to see that show and I came out and I said, okay, yeah, this is going to have to try this in Kilkenny, see how we go.
Okay.
Took the pen and paper out and here I am 16, 17 months later, ready to hit Tullamore on Saturday night at the show. So it's developed really from, I suppose it's probably been maybe 18 months kind of in the pipeline, in the works, you know what I mean? And we've been so lucky. We've been to other venues and it's gone down fantastically well. And so here we are now coming to Offaly on Saturday night, yeah.
So tell us how Cinderella differs from your traditional pantomime, the ones that we'd all be used to knowing the tropes of.
Yeah, so it stays true to, I suppose, the traditional story of Cinderella. Now there is twists, there is little kind of things, I suppose, that people come to, they will see. But what is, I suppose, the show contains the jokes, the innuendo, the names of the characters. They would all be, I suppose, they wouldn't be what you would hear at a family panto. So
yes,
it's very, very much more, I suppose, geared towards an adult audience. Much more adult interaction. We encourage adult interaction. The jokes are very for adults, and we poke fun at a lot of things that probably maybe we shouldn't poke fun at. And we play off all that. Do you know what I mean? So, I suppose it's. I mean, they're the main. The main differences. We really just have just kind of. We encourage everyone to come and have a great time. Let your hair down for the 2 hours, and I suppose laugh at things that probably out in the world now, which is so PC that we probably can't laugh at. Like, do you know what I mean? Or we're afraid to laugh at.
Yeah.
So we just kind of we poke fun and prod at a lot of them type of things, always, to answer you. But all in good fun and in good nature, and it's just really, really great fun for 2 hours and great crack. And that's kind of what we want. That's what we encourage. As I say, like, we obviously like the chance for parents to come, have a few drinks, meet friends, leave the children at home for the night, and which has been very, very funny in the theatres that we've done it so far. And we go for a few drinks after. We always just meet people that are out for the night that have been at the show for 2 hours and they're out with their friends for the night, like, and that kind of thing. So it's just a crazy night of adult fun, staying true, I suppose, to the traditional story of Cinderella, with an adult flavour, kind of. Woven intro throughout it, really.
And you touched on it there about, I suppose, in this day and age, we live in a very overly PC world, nearly, where you're afraid to say a lot of things, and it's nearly gotten to a stage where you feel like you can't say anything anymore. So do you take that, I suppose, cautious modern-day approach to the jokes, or do you do a little bit of going, do you know what, we'll go with the old tongue-in-cheek ones and hope for the best, or how do you kind of, I suppose, appropriately approach the jokes? How do you know where that line is?
It was very trial and error the first time, because I didn't know how this would work.
I can imagine.
You're bringing something new. So we ran it in Kilkenny to a smaller audience, smaller venue, and it just went down fantastically well. I was listening for the first laugh of the night backstage just to see how this would be, I suppose, received. But I think once people do it, just, I suppose, people know, people realise very, very quickly what the show is like. I mean, it's I suppose, like, look, if people go to a stand-up comedy show and, you know, they poke fun as well. And it's kind of that, like, I mean, it's not, you know, the jokes are kind of geared toward adults, but we just kind of go for it. We don't, like, there is obviously, you know, there will be certain kind of things here and there that would be off limits. But by and large, 99% of the things in the world that go on are kind of, are not off limits. we go. But we do it in a quite... It's all done, I think, very tastefully and very, I suppose, in fairness, credit to the cast, it's done very, very, very well and very comedically, and we just have a great fun and a great, great time doing it. Like, and I think the audience kind of feed off our energy and vice versa. And we just encourage, we have so much of this audience interaction, and we encourage that. We even have, without giving away too much, but... You know, we even have people up on stage with us at certain times, like, okay. You know, in part of the show and all that kind of stuff. So it's just a wild, wild fun night, like John suggested. It's good crack with great people that are involved alongside me, you know.
And I imagine, I suppose, to keep with the classical panto format, you do keep some of those tropes, like the he's behind you and things. I assume it's nearly funny. You'd have obviously a lot of people in the audience that maybe they have been forced along to go to pantos with their children. They've sat through that night, that they know all the common lines that when you then throw them in, it's nearly like a little nod saying, I'm going to give you the line, but we're going to do it in a different way.
Oh, yeah, that's it. I think you hit the nail on the head. It's literally, like, it is very much like a family panto, but it's not very much like a family panto.
Yes.
If that makes sense. Like, it's just something that... And the premise of when I was writing this show, 18 months ago, whatever it was, now, it was like, okay, if I was in an audience and I wanted to come and just have a night where I could just have great fun a good night entertainment where I could let my hair down and laugh at things that I can't laugh at, you know, and try kind of keep some of them kind of panto elements as we know them in the show, like, say, like the audience interaction and all that kind of thing, and you said he's behind you, but we kind of put, as I said, the adult kind of, I suppose, the adult spin on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, but I mean, all good nature, fun, like, do you know what I mean? And it, you know, we modernize it in parts, obviously, panto, like, do you know what I mean? And we put our twist on it, I suppose. I won't give too much away to anyone that might be coming that's listening, but you'll have a great night's entertainment. It's good fun. It's good light-hearted entertainment, which I think we are probably lacking a lot of in the world at the moment, for one reason or another. But and that's kind of where we are with it. Like, we just want people to come and have just a brilliant time. And we've been so lucky. Like, the feedback we've got from audiences through when we've done the show, then the venues we've been to, like, just the feedback has been exceptional. Like, do you know what I mean? It's been really, really great. And something we as a group are supposed to be very proud of, like, and it doesn't go unnoticed, like, do you know what I mean? So we're fingers crossed it'll go down a storm in Tullamore on Saturday night as well, hopefully.
And you're actually in the cast yourself as well, so as well as writing it, directing it, you're playing one of the characters too.
I am indeed. I'm playing one of the ugly sisters whose name I can't give on the radio.
I think we're not
at the watershed yet, and even if we were at that time, I don't know, because they'll give it anyway. So I'm playing one of the ugly sisters. I'm playing alongside a colleague of mine, Trevor O'Neill, and it's just a great time on stage. We have a cast of seven, Zoe.
That's not a big cast, you know.
No, but we have five dancers with as well, and then we have live music. So, but I suppose, like, the way it is, because we're going into teasers and going out of teasers, like, I suppose logistically, like, you know, these things have to be kind of, you have a certain amount of time to get in, get out.
Yeah, to be that smaller scale.
It has to be, you know what I mean? And it's in terms of just managing the whole, I suppose, the whole thing and rehearsals, I suppose, we've kind of kept it to that kind of cast of seven, five dancers. We have our stage manager and he'd have a stage, backstage crew member with him. And then we'd have, we have live music as well. We've Dennis Nolivia playing live music. So there's probably... I would say probably 16, 17 maybe involved throughout the show. And then obviously you bring in your lighting and the sound guys and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, but I suppose essentially just probably 16, 17 of us involved. They keep coming back every time I ask them. So
they must be enjoying it too.
We must be doing something nice. We must be. But it's great fun. And you know, the lads are having a blast doing it as well. Like, and
yeah.
I suppose as it's actually an opportunity for us, I suppose, to let our hair down as well on stage and just have a crack and have a crack with the audience. And like, we've done this show a good number of times, like, and it's nearly different every time we do it. We just it can go off script, it can go anyway, it can just go anyway, and that's part of the fun. Like, sometimes you see the lads on stage in terms of characters, we'll break character and we'll just actually laugh ourselves at stuff, or
you're feeding off the audience, and I suppose you're 100%. Kind of rolling with like that. If you go off script or you forget a line, it's always better to just roll with that and incorporate it into 100%. The script.
And I think audience appreciate that as well.
Definitely,
like, I mean, I think audience, what we found, they love that. And like, you know, we'd forget lines and we'd break character and we'd have to go, you know, go and get the line outside or whatever it is, but it's all done very, very
comedically.
Very kind of comedically, like, yes. You know, and I think it just adds to the whole kind of sense of
100%
wackiness and craziness, and all that kind of stuff. But it's a fantastic night entertainment, of light-hearted entertainment, like, do you know what I mean?
And you mentioned that this, you know, it's been really well received. You're saying that the cast, you're enjoying doing it. Is this the first of these adult-only pantos that you've written? And has, I suppose, the good reaction, would that encourage you to write another, or is that something that's already in the works, or have you done another one?
Yeah, so we've actually, we've ran our so basically we're Kilkenny based, so we initially did a stage Cinderella last March, 12 months in Clears, which is a very small intimate theatre in Kilkenny, holds just under 70 people, and we ran for a good number of performances there. So we've actually within last April, a couple of months ago, 3 months ago, we actually staged our second adult panto in Clears, which was a parody of Robin Hood.
I had seen that advertised on your page, and I wasn't sure if you were just involved in it or if it was actually one of your own productions.
That was our second show in Kilkenny, so we're working with a couple of venues at the moment, and maybe, you know, see if we can bring that to a couple of places next year, later this year we are in New Ross, but then next year we're looking at maybe one or two. So that's our second show that we have kind of started. Like, it's been staged in Kilkenny, and again, look, it was actually, I suppose, not a concern, but sometimes I was thinking about, like, well, okay, the first show has gone down so well, received so well, and like, will the second one be received so well?
Do you know
that kind of way? You want to keep it kind of at that kind of, you know, that you want to get the same reaction and to be as good as the first show.
Of course.
And that was received fantastically well as well. We kind of had the same cast, and we brought in another one or two people as well, local performers who just brought so much to the table. They were doing fantastically. So we have that kind of in the pipeline.
Great.
And yeah, so that is us as well, says the parody of Robin Hood. So, yes, I say Cinderella is the one kind of that at the moment we are kind of, our energies are going to at the moment. Yeah. And I keep saying, looking forward to being to a new audience on. It's brilliant to a new audience, just to see how it'll be received. Like, when we stages in New Ross, I mean, we went back to New Ross the second night. It was so well received. We were asked back for a second night, which we did. But
fantastic.
I suppose when you go to a new venue, like we were in Carlow 2 months ago on the visual, and it's really exciting to go to a new venue and see how a new audience do have no idea really. I suppose they probably go, "I had a panto. I'm sure there'll be a few."
They have an idea, but they don't really know.
A bit of foul language here and there, maybe that'll be it or whatever. But then you kind of go after the first couple of lines to kind of go, "Okay, this now I get what this is." Like, you know what I mean? And it's just a great night, fun night entertainment, like, for people to come and have a laugh and meet their friends, have a few drinks, and enjoy.
And you're coming to the Dean Crow then in October as well.
Yeah, so Friday the 9th of October, we had tickets went on sale there not too long ago for the Dean Crow in Athlone.
Great,
so we are delighted to be taking it there in October as well. So fingers crossed.
Fantastic.
That will be well received as well. And if any of your listeners are listening, tickets are on sale there to Dean Crow at the moment. We're blessed that the Esker Arts in Tullamore is sold out for Saturday night, which is brilliant.
Fantastic.
It's, I'm just so thankful to the people of Tullamore and surrounding areas, like, for buying into it and coming along to see the show and see what it's about. So,
Mark, it really has been a pleasure. Thanks a million for the experience. And look, everyone, head along to Cinderella in Esker Arts on Saturday.
Thank you, Zoe. Thank you. Thank you. Take care.
Thanks a million, Mark. And that's it for me tonight now. I'll be back on your airways on Thursday evening with a lot of guests that I don't have time to run through at the moment. So you're just going to have to tune in next week to hear about it. But that's going to be on next week's Encore. I myself, though, will be making an appearance on Sally Ann Barrett's show this Saturday on her back catalogue feature, where we'll be discussing a legendary female artist who I've actually spoken about on this show before. Can you guess who it is? In the meantime, Joe Cooney will keep you entertained. He'll be here after the news at 8. Until next week, that's it for me. Good night.